The boys start off this week's show with another Pride Month flick, the colorful and provocative But I'm a Cheerleader. They transition from hyper colors to dark and brooding when they head to the theater to check out the historically revisionist novel brought to life in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. In Trailer Land, they chat about the superheroization of some famous childhood legends in Rise of the Guardians. In movie news, there's some talk about a Marvel animated film. Tron's director nabs another band to score his new flick. And we've got some more Batman stuff to chat about. It's the 111th reel of COL Movies. Oh my god. They were right. I'm a homo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my cheery co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How you guys doing?
I'm definitely not cheery.
My drink of choice today is a kamikaze and some root beer.
Okay.
All right. Ready? Okay. Let's go to the news.
News on the mark.
News you can use.
Oh God.
I don't know. Disney Animation to tackle Marvel's Big Hero 6. This must have been a co-product from somewhere in Japan, just by the name of the title.
Big Hero 6. Yeah, well,
the reason why I put this on here was not so much anything to do with the actual comic book itself, because other than, well, I'll get into it in a minute, but there's been a lot of speculation since Disney is, you know, now owns Marvel that, you know, were we ever going to see an animated Marvel film pop up anytime soon? So I guess this is going to be our first actual animated by Disney Marvel property. So they're targeting 2014, but there is no script or anything at the moment. It's, you know, as you said, it's the comic book is Big Hero 6, which is a Japan-based group. It was created in 1998, and other than the two people, the Silver Samurai and Sunfire, I have no idea who any of these other people are.
That's because they're all Japanese.
Unfortunately, the Silver Samurai and Sunfire can't be in it because 20th Century Fox owns all the rights to characters that originated in X-Men, which those two did.
God.
Silver Surfer did? Did
you say? No, Silver Samurai.
Silver Samurai.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said, I was like, he did? Oh, got you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
Different character.
So,
yeah, you know, really.
Obviously, they're not going to be able to use those guys in it, which is kind of sad.
Disney needs to do something about that. I mean, really, they can't limit themselves. They need to get these properties back. I mean, really.
Well, Disney,
you have the money. Just get them back and it'll be fine. That way, you take all the proceeds.
There was another rumor today about Spider-Man being in the Avengers sequel, and that's all being blown around right now because the same thing is, you know, with Marvel and Sony. Sony owns the rights to all the characters that originated in the Spider-Man comics, so there's no way that they can get them back without some renegotiation or just outright rebuying the rights to their own characters, which is kind of stupid.
But. And the nice thing is, I mean, they're still getting money from these appropriate movies. Like for Amazing Spider-Man, they're getting money out of that. They're just not getting all of the money out of that, so they need to. They should probably think in the near future to get them back, because especially if you're going to work in the Marvel universe and you're going to be, you know, spreading it around, especially working with the Avengers, they're probably going to run into some of these guys. They just should get them back.
Yeah, I think, I mean, of course, money's probably an issue, but I also think just creative control of your own people, or you can't do stuff with them that you would like, and it sort of kind of prohibits you from making a one cohesive story, universe, whatever.
Creatively limited.
Yeah.
Because of it. I mean, in some sense, you're not, because you don't have to worry about this one character. Mm-hmm. It's like Spider-Man doesn't exist in the Avengers world.
Yes.
Well, when you go to the Marvel Comics, be like, well, Spider-Man is an Avenger. In fact, if you look at these AVX books, he just fought Colossus, who's an X-Man, as being an Avenger. So shouldn't he be part of the Avengers? And Spider-Man knows Nick Fury. This is all confusing.
Yeah.
So they should just bring it back just to prevent brand confusion.
Just yeah, that. I mean, real fans of the comic, I think the real fans of the comic books tend to have a little more knowledge of, I mean, the overlying reason as to why they can't do these things, whether they agree with it or not, or think it's a good thing or not, doesn't matter. It sucks, but that's what happens when you decide at one point that you're not interested in making movies and you sell your rights off to movie studios, and then you decide you want to make your own movies. Then you have to deal with the consequences.
Well, in this case, it was probably more of, at the time, they're like, okay, we have these properties. We would love to make movies, but we can't afford it because they were not owned by Disney at the time. So they're like, hey, Fox, you want the rights to X-Men? And they're like, sure, I'll take them. And then they write up an agreement. As long as you make X-Men movies within a certain period of time, you can keep the rights. It's all great. And, you know, right. You still have to give us these royalty fees, but blah, 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 and stuff. And Marvel's all excited because they don't have to worry and about stuff. Funding everything. They get the brand name on the screen and everything. So they get all these benefits without having to spend as much money, and they get money back from it. Yeah. So they're all fine and happy and dandy.
I think it's much more simple. I think it was, wow, look at how much DC made by selling their rights to Batman to have movies made. We've got comic book characters that can make good movies here. Let's shop them around.
Yeah.
And see who bites.
That's what I was thinking. Well, I mean, and ultimately, you've got to build up a fan base for the individual characters probably before you can really bring them all together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Except in the case of X-Men. Like, you realize that's X-Men. It's not right. Just Wolverine. You know, they kind of went backwards, I think, with the X-Men, because you have the X-Men movie, and then you're trying to – then they were trying to shop around the individual people. Mm-hmm. You know, and we saw what happened with Wolverine. So the chances of, you know, the actual Wolverine origin story. So they're probably not going to go the route of individual movies, whereas on the other hand – with the Avengers, you've got enough to have individual movies on each of those characters. And then when you bring them together, it's like a massive blockbuster because people love those characters individually.
And they were, right. Well, and for all intents and purposes, they were individual heroes before they became right. The Avengers in the first place anyways.
Right.
X-Men always started out as the X-Men.
Right.
You know, we had... had Cyclops, we had Beast, we have Iceman, we have Angel, and we have Marvel Girl. So that was the original X-Men, and they just expanded on this. All of the heroes who we think of as X-Men most likely, if not completely, came from X-Books. So it was right. Always they were always X-Men before they became individual characters. The Wolverine just ended up just being a really popular character. He was introduced in X-Men, and just people loved this character, so they spun him off, and he was very successful for that. In fact, he's the only successful person to have ended up having an ongoing series. The only one of the X-Men, too. So,
well, and does he crosses? I know this is a crazy question, but doesn't he cross over to the Avengers at some point?
Yeah, I wouldn't say cross over.
Okay.
Because the Beast is also in Avengers. In fact, I'm reading the Avengers versus X-Men books right now, and Beast and Wolverine are both on the Avengers side of things. Gotcha. But they really, for all intents and purposes, these two characters are both. They really are both. It's just their ideals compared to, like, Scott Summers, the actual leader of the X-Men right now. Professor Xavier retired.
Right.
He's still alive, but he just retired. And... they had their difference. There was a schism series and such. Wolverine started his own school. Uh-huh. Wolverine as headmaster. Kind of crazy, huh? Well, Beast came over with him. But out of everybody, all the other teachers in the school, only Wolvie and Beast went with the Avenger side of things.
Okay.
Everybody else stayed with the X-Men. But for all intents and purposes, even though they're siding on this issue, they're still both. They're still X-Men. They're just siding with the Avengers on this time. So,
gotcha.
But that's a completely and utterly tangent that which has nothing to do with the movies, because we can't connect the X-Men and the Avengers because they're in the movie versus they're in completely two different universes. So,
yep.
Unfortunately. But hopefully, eventually, Disney will be like, you know, this X thing, Marvel's doing such a great job with their Avengers and other tales that let's get them back from Fox. And, you know, that Fantastic Four thing, let's get them back, too, because they're also in New York and it just makes more sense. Oh, and Sony, can we have Spider-Man back? Okay, thanks, bye. And then they just, you know, basically make an actual full-fledged Marvel world. And when Thanos comes back, because we saw them at the end of the Avengers, no, that's not a spoiler. You've had enough time to see the movie. If you haven't seen it, you're a dumbass. So when Thanos comes around, we have this whole Marvel Universe war versus just Avengers,
right?
Which is
all of these are superhero movies, just like Prometheus is an alien movie, right?
It's a full-fledged alien movie. It's not it's a full-fledged alien movie.
It's in the Alien universe.
Just it is like a prequel. It's not a sideline prequel. It's a freaking prequel, anyways. Don't get me started on that.
So silly for me to say that the news is going to go by quickly. I'm going to smack you, Steven. Sorry.
No, I think that was the kamikaze. Anyways, moving on to M83 to score Oblivion. Who's M83? Right.
I knew Jeff was going to ask that.
I'm glad I could fly.
M83 is a band.
Let's get that part out.
Obviously one that Jeff doesn't listen to. But they are going to be much stepping into the shoes like Daft Punk, and they're going to be scoring a movie. The interesting thing is that the movie they're scoring, which is called Oblivion, is the next movie by Joseph Kaczynski, who has directed Tron Legacy. So I don't know how much of an influence Mr. Kaczynski is having on, like, he's picking, you know, like maybe handpicking these bands for to do the soundtrack, but they're you know, it's basically like a French, you know, electro pop techno kind of group. So I'm guessing that Mr. Kaczynski is having a great deal of influence on who's scoring these films. But you know, who knows? We'll see if he makes his next movie, you know, he gets somebody equally as Euro poppy to score, then we'll see what happens. But I'd never heard anything about this movie. This was the first time it sort of hit my radar. I guess it's based on his own comic book series. Basic premise is Earth's surface has been irradiated beyond recognition. Remnants of humanity live above the clouds, safe from the brutal alien scavengers that stalk the ruins. But when surface drone repairman Jack, who's going to be played by Tom Cruise, discovers a mysterious woman in a crash-landed pod, it sets off an unstoppable chain of events that will force him to question everything he knows.
Morgan Freeman and Melissa Leo are the two stars that are also in here are notable. Also, Andrea Riseborough and Nicolaj Coster-Waldau.
Yeah, and who people should know from Game of Thrones is Jaime Lannister.
Oh. So. I recognize the Jaime Lannister name. I just didn't really. Only two people that I know the actors' names were Sean Bean playing Ned Stark and oh dear God, who plays Tyrion? Because I can't think of the name.
Your take, Lich.
Thank you. It's a name that you say it, I'll recognize and be like, oh yeah, he's Tyrion Lannister. But the other way around, when I can't think of the name, anyways, that's not the point.
Yeah, the other person that we mentioned, Andrea Riseborough, she's not been in anything I think I've ever watched. So I'm looking at her filmography and I'm going, what? Who? What? Never heard
what's
of anything.
What's that?
Thing the camp and whatnot.
Yeah, basically.
Universal delays born to avoid Dark Knight Rises. Whoop-dee-freaking-do.
Well, I
mean, it makes sense, but
it's smart on their part. They're assuming that the Dark Knight is going to pull an Avengers, and
everybody's going to think that the newborn is just Hawkeye out on his own because it's going up against the Dark Knight. So we need to separate it so no one thinks comics when it comes out.
Well, I think they're just more worried about getting rolled over. Just sort of getting ignored. You know,
they want a big opening.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I think the Bourne Legacy looks interesting, and it's actually sort of spawned off a whole bunch of rumors about that there may be, you know, because we talked in the news before about how you know, they went ahead and made this movie, and what's his name had no idea that he wasn't going to be in it. I was just blanking on his name. The guy who starred in the last one, Matt Damon.
Yes. Oh, Damon. Yeah.
So, I guess now there's like the couple producers have said that they would love to see the two of them in a movie together, because I guess, and this was totally lost on me because I've seen the trailer for The Bourne Legacy, but I guess wasn't paying attention, that The Bourne Legacy takes place at the same time as one of the Bourne movies, Bourne Ultimatum. So they're coexist in the same time.
Oh, kind of like Alien and Prometheus?
No.
Yeah.
That's, if anything, that's two separate times. Just the same universe. And that's beside the point. So
death to you, Steven.
This is more of like along the lines of 007. And what they haven't done with James Bond quite accurately, because no matter which James Bond you're looking at, it is always supposed to be the same James Bond. His wife dies the same way, always something about that. So the backstory about his wife dying is always there with the same, with the different actors. My explanation as to why there was a James Bond way back in 1960, what was it, the first one, when did Dr. No come out? Wow. And then we have one who's probably about the same age as he was in 1960-something, who's out now and is being played by Daniel Craig, is because James Bond, if you're 007, your name is James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been multiple James Bonds. That's the explanation. Works for me and works for this type of thing, which I'm assuming is actually the reason what they do it. And they just have multiple Bournes, so it just happens that they cross over in this case.
Yeah.
Oh, what about, isn't there a 006?
Yeah, they have different 00s, but if you end up getting the slot for 007 because one retires or leaves or dies or something, then you get the 007 slot. Your name is James Bond.
Okay. That's one way to think about it.
And that's one of the reasons why there's different characteristics between the different James Bonds, too. Because while they all have this whole, there's at least a little bit of a womanizer in it, they still have different attitudes when you look at them.
Nope.
Because everybody has a favorite James Bond.
Everybody has their first.
Yeah. I'm still a Pierce Brosnan James Bond, really. And he's my favorite. The rest are classic, don't get me wrong. But he's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. Bourne Legacy.
Yep.
Did we put that on the list? That sounds like a movie that we should have on the list, but
it might be on there somewhere.
Anyway. Last but not least, more Dark Knight Rises. So for God's sakes, will this movie just release?
Well, the funny thing about this story is that it's really no surprise to anybody. We've talked about this before in various forms. It's just sort of getting confirmed. So they're talking about a producer of The Dark Knight Rises, which is Emma Thomas, which just so happens to be Christopher Nolan's wife. She made a statement about, you know, the future of their involvement in the franchise, and basically, without a shadow of a doubt, said, yeah, he's never going to be involved in another Batman film again, which, strong words, never say never, but I wouldn't put it past Nolan to not ever do one again. But I love the statement because it's like, I cannot imagine a world in which we would ever want to come back.
Wow.
Well, I think part of this is when Nolan gets his hands on something for direction, it really ends up being a Nolanverse story. Mm. So I can't think of him as ever directing a story, a Batman story, that's not in the Nolanverse that we have right now. So what we know is these three movies are a trilogy. It's over, done with. We're not coming back to this universe again. So if he's going to come back to Batman, it's got to be a completely different universe. I can't see him doing that. It would just bring it back into the Nolanverse, and then it's an all-out lie, and he's like, no. But I can see him producing. Basically, what he's doing with Man of Steel.
What they basically said was they've spent 10 years of their life making these films, and they're excited about the movie and the story that they've come up with, but they couldn't imagine being excited about another version of the same thing, and that, you know, they feel that their trilogy is like it's a beginning, middle, and end, and once you do a fourth one, then it just becomes like doing episodes.
Right.
And then they're, you know, they're basically just like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Well, so. Also, at this point in time, what I really think DC and Warner Brothers needs to do is actually sit down and put their shit together. And starting with Man and Steel, put together the Justice League and start getting together basically the DC version of the Marvel Universe, you know? And, I mean, it doesn't have to be an exact type of situation, but really put all their movies all in the same universe and connect them, even if they don't even necessarily do Justice League, which, of course, they're going to do Justice League movie. That's just given. Mm-hmm. But
they just need to fucking do the Wonder Woman movie. They've been
do you know how hard that is? I mean, and how hard of a sell a Wonder Woman movie is?
Especially after that.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
Horrible shot at TV.
So
yeah, and honestly, I actually really enjoy the current comic of Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So Wonder Woman, I think, is actually a neat character. The only thing is, I think that she works better inside the Justice League than on her own.
Yeah.
So I can see them making anybody.
I always immediately when we talk Wonder Woman, I immediately jump back to Linda Carter.
Yeah.
Because that's that. Much like my first James Bond, that was my first Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And that's never going to happen again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Wonder Woman has evolved way too much since then.
And Green Lantern, they can do better on. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the last Green Lantern movie, but they could do better on it. If they brought it into a world with the Man of Steel, which I'm really, really excited about. I'm really excited to see how that ends up turning out. And if they use that as the basis of the new DC universe for movies, and it ends up being awesome, they need to basically restart Green Lantern, not with Ryan Reynolds, need a new actor. And just reboot everything, you know, a new Batman movie, all in the same universe, and have cameos and the Justice League and a Justice League movie.
Well, I mean, didn't they just essentially reboot all their comic books?
Yeah.
So
they've got a new universe to play in. And a couple of things didn't really necessarily reboot, like the Batman stuff didn't reboot. We just kind of picked off the left up. There were some minor tweaks to the background of the storyline. But everything that happened before happened before. So
weird.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. But there is no John or Martha Kent. They're dead. I'm a little saddened about that. But that's the new DC. The new 32.
Aww.
Or 52. But that's beside the point.
So, shall we talk about cheerleaders?
Let's go. You're
telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
But I'm a cheerleader. Hmm. 1999, 34% rotten, 73% audience. Directed by Jamie Babbitt, starring Natasha Lyonne, Clea DuVall, Michelle Williams, and featuring RuPaul. But
how could you say not starring? Yet. Not starring Kathy Moriarty.
I don't know. I just copied and
pasted. Oh, I know. I'm just saying.
I was being lazy today. It was just like copy and paste from IMDb. But yeah, I mean, there's essentially more stars in those three because we have this nice ensemble cast.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good... I'd never heard of this movie before. This is my first...
Oh, really?
Yeah, my first really? Exposure to it.
This is like my third.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I hadn't watched it in a long time.
Right.
So I haven't watched it in a year.
Yeah, you did it on your 30 and 30.
My Gay Pride Movie Month Challenge.
Yep.
Which you can find on COLmovies.com. Mm-hmm. If you scroll back to June of 2011, you'll find 30 reviews. Oh, this is one of them.
There you go. Well, okay. The premise, well, we should just say the premise of this for those who haven't seen it, because it is a bit of an obscure movie, and it has aged. Like, I didn't even realize it was a 1999 movie. I thought it was, you know, like an early 2000s, but not that far back. But the premise of it is, you know, there's this girl who's a cheerleader, and she comes to kind of realize that she's got some things that are going on in her mind, but her friends are picking up on it faster than she is. So her friends and family stage an intervention. And next thing you know, she's at this Christian-based camp kind of thing where they're trying to convert her straight, along with several other campers. And all of the administrators there are also ex-gay. That kind of stuff as well. So, but it's not a super serious one like a lot of people think. It's super camp.
Yeah, it's definitely super campy. Super
camp. I mean, if RuPaul's in it, you know it's super camp.
Yeah, but it's RuPaul.
It's RuPaul.
Not Charles. Drag.
Yeah, it's RuPaul Charles. It's not, definitely like, not RuPaul.
What? You know. It's like you like start hearing his voice. If you didn't know that it was him to begin with, or her, or him, him, her, to begin with, when you're watching this movie, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Where's that voice from?" I recognize that. It's just I don't.
Because he doesn't do the smile. He doesn't do that smile. He does
the
in
big,
his,
big green smile. No, because
he's trying to act all tough. Because he's trying to. In his short shorts, in his blue short shorts.
Can you believe how gay that place was? By the
way, well, yeah.
I mean,
let's make people straight by putting them in the gayest outfits ever,
and do that whole like uber pink thing and uber blue baby blue.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Look to it, and short shorts, and just oh my god, it's like. Are you trying to de-gay by gaying them up? Extra? Yeah. Special?
It's like, take them to the brink and then break them down.
It's like it's like Ritalin. You know, it's a stimulant that you give the hyperactive kids. And it makes them get all dopey.
Exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, I have to say, though, the funny part about this mainly, of course, is the fact that the gay male characters are the side of this movie. Right. You know, just trying to focus on the women, particularly, and give a new perspective. Yeah, which is a new perspective, because I think when we jump to these kind of things, we don't often jump to the lesbian contingent, you know? And that's one reason I wanted this on our list.
We need something that was more female-oriented.
Yeah, exactly. So this is one where it comes from that side of the house. It's not the flaming guy in theater that everybody's doing the intervention on. It's the cheerleader, which was kind of an interesting aspect of it. Where they come up with all of it because of the fact that, like, when she kisses her boyfriend,
Oh my god!
She's totally not into it.
Sure, I wasn't into kissing the girls that I kissed in high school either, but I was a lot better kisser than that. I don't know what your problem was. I still don't know how to do it. If I thought it was. That's what I'm supposed to do, you know?
Yeah, that's totally a Jeff embarrassing moment. I could totally see that.
Seriously, this is that part of the movie where she's doing the kissing thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, what? I wasn't hiding or anything. I was embarrassing. I was like, really?
I'm embarrassed for her, right?
I'm not even embarrassed. I'm like, you should be embarrassed from this. I mean, what?
He didn't care. He's like, he's like a 16, 17 year old boy. He's just going to, he's going to and fuck whatever. No,
that boy cared. I mean, he cared enough to take it to the, you don't even like kissing me. How does he know that she doesn't like kissing her? Because she kisses terribly.
Right. Could just,
you know, there is this obviousness. So he knew that when they brought up this, hey, we're going to have an intervention because we think she's a lesbian. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like, yeah, he's probably is because she doesn't like kissing me at all because she's a terrible, terrible kisser. She can't be that bad. I mean, even the bad kisses I've had seemed to be better than the kisses that she was doing. I mean, come on, what the fuck? This really is one of those movies where you could actually say that there is a bunch of embarrassing moments, but none of them, and this is one of the reasons why I like this movie, is none of those embarrassing moments were embarrassing enough for me to run and hide.
Even when the girl was stimulating herself with the stick?
No, that was just funny.
Under the cover, and she's
the
like,
immersion
Well, she did say she liked pain, so
that's true, right? Exactly.
But that's what I got out of that, was that she was actually just getting off that whole time because she's just
just a little bit of a sadist.
Exactly.
Keep forgetting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think that overall, I mean, it's completely a campy movie. You can't take it seriously. It's not really a play.
I don't know if I would say it's completely campy. I think it's like 95% campy.
Yeah.
But I think there's some pretty serious message in there.
Mm-hmm. True. You know? No, I agree with that.
So
I just mean, but it's not for people who think that it's going to be this hyper one with like it's a documentary on going inside these Christian conversion camps.
Right.
It's totally not that. No. It's not like super serious, like Saved or where Saved is a comedy with a super serious message.
Right.
This one has a serious message. It's just it's covered in splashes of hot pink and powder blue.
Yeah, I think the camp in this is. This is campy, but it's not over the top campy, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Like comparing this to another gay movie.
Star Booty.
No. Star Booty is probably way out there. But still, if you compare it to another gay movie, another gay movie is over the top campy and everything. This one is a little more tame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that nice balance that I like from this is too being too campy and not campy at all, you know?
Right.
True.
This isn't like a, you know, it's not a movie that I'd expect to see like Divine in or, you know what I mean? Like those sort of over the top campy sort of films.
True.
And this proves, compared to Star Booty, that RuPaul can actually act.
Oh, I think all drag queens can act, honey.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But
did you have any? I mean, one of the things about this movie, though, is the cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it's worth discussing because, I mean, I think we all probably wound up with some favorites out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I really resonated with the wrestler guy, which made me laugh more than anybody else.
Uh huh.
Because he was also, I'm a high school wrestler. Yeah.
Right.
You know, like I like guys. Oh, you know, it's just funny. That characterization is funny to me.
Yeah. To me, I always sort of gravitate towards whoever's in the Chrissy McNichol role. So, okay. Clea DuVall.
I mean, it's true.
as soon as I'm like, oh, she's playing the Chrissy McNichol character. All right, cool. You know, I'm totally down with that.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of it like that. The Christy McNichol role. So true.
The sort of angry smoking. Yes. Well, that would be mine.
Jeff, did you have one?
For favorite?
Yeah.
No, I can't say I really did. And not that I didn't. I thought all of them were crappy or anything. Just I never really had a specific favorite character that I really liked that really stood out or anything. Right. All of them had their own quirks that got me to like them. Of course, I like RuPaul. Just had the great marks, and I mean the lady's son, which I can't remember his name. And just that whole thing where the boys look at him and are like, just drooling over him and being all girly, and even he does it. And I think the boys were probably, if anything, just kind of the group were actually my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they were also supposed to be painting the, you know, they were the window dressing.
Yeah, the boys were the window dressing. No. That's true.
They were the pretty stuff.
And the ladies.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out to Richard Mall, though, because
yes.
But God help me, if I ever walked into anybody's house and saw that many rainbows, I would turn around and walk right out the door.
Hey, I love your pride and everything, but this is too much for me.
Like, whoa!
I'm glad you're proud, but really, this gaudy? I mean, really.
When did you move into the Pride Shop?
Right, exactly.
Truth or there.
A rainbow here, a rainbow there. Sure, fine.
Right.
At least, you know, if they could have done like bear colors. At least then they'd be earth tones, and I can handle that.
There you go.
Jeez. Oh, Ray. Well, one of the things that I thought was actually particularly interesting in this movie was. And I didn't even think about this until I was finding the trailer that I wanted to put on here.
Mm-hmm.
I kept noticing that every trailer was red banded.
Really?
Yeah. And so I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I thought I'd do a little research into that to find out that it was initially being given an NC-17.
Yeah.
Mainly because one of the girls talks about going down on another girl.
Mm.
And there was a scene in which two of the girls are touching each other, and one puts her hand in the puts her hand on the on her body. Mm-hmm. Clothed, by the way. So they had to remove some of these things in order to actually get the rating to an R.
Yeah. I can believe you. Well, I mean, we look at it now in 2012 and go,
yeah.
What? Really? But yeah, I mean, right. back in the day when this was, I mean, hey, any sort of, you know, blatant, you know, homosexuality in a film is going to flag somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you how far we've sort of come in such a little, you know, short period of time where if this movie was to be re-rated today, it would be, you know.
I think it would still be R because I think there's plenty enough.
Yeah, I mean, it would be R, but I don't think that would ever have to be like, I don't think they would have had to cut any of that stuff out.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a question on the NC-17 part. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, but. I think part of it too probably was the MPAA thinking of it as teenagers,
right?
Homosexuals,
not adults, right? Exactly, and that's probably a big piece of it. By the way, I thought I saw. If you haven't seen it, it is available on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's streaming now or not, but you've got to see this film. Is not yet rated. If you haven't seen that documentary, because this is like the second time I've come across a movie that was mentioned in that film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting look at how the system for ratings works.
or doesn't work.
Or yeah, right, exactly. That's a good point. But how it's set up.
Yeah. Right,
how it's set up. So I just thought that was an interesting play on this because of the fact that I was like, why is everything red banded? They don't show any titties or anything in this, you know? I'm like,
right.
Why is the red band trailer?
They're talking about lesbians.
Exactly.
Because right. if you would have taken the lesbian part out of this and all the sexuality in it was heterosexual, it would have totally been a fine R movie.
Yeah true.
Maybe even PG-13. Maybe that's a little bit of a stretch, but still.
Yeah.
True. Good point. Well, critically, it's not a success. Critically, critics pretty well panned it. For the most part, thinking that it was just really heavy-handed in the satire, and they didn't even feel, and several of them felt that the talent of the actors just didn't really shine because they were made to be so campy. On the positive side, in general, people thought it was funny, but also got a backhanded compliment in a few places where people didn't think it was a great movie, but it's going to be one that resonates with cult fans.
Which I think probably ended up happening.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. You know, I don't have any specific critical notes of the movie, but I will say that for me, though, I like Natasha Lyonne, but she doesn't seem to fit in this role. And that's something that just ever since I've seen this movie, I just kind of go, she's not who I want her to be in this movie. I feel like I don't know who would be better at it. I really couldn't tell you, at least at that time. But she just doesn't come off. She doesn't come off like a cheerleader to me.
Right.
I feel like if Michelle Williams, who was in this movie, had traded with her, that would have been interesting.
Yeah. I agree, though. She doesn't really come off to me in my mind as the person who's like the ultra popular cheerleader type.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I feel like if Michelle Williams had played that role, like if they had flipped those two actors, that would have been fine for me.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, it doesn't resonate with me. She as the lead did not resonate with me. But the story itself and the fact that it was being so campy and stuff like that, like, okay, I get it, but she didn't come off to me like the lead.
Right. Understood.
Yep. So what did we learn, Heather?
Well, so what have we learned from But I'm a Cheerleader? Only lesbians eat tofu. Brainwashing someone is so much harder after college. Being born in France makes you gay. Foreplay is for sissies. And real men go in, unload, and pull out.
Motherfucker. Spit.
Anyway, I've always loved this movie. It shows the absurdity of the so-called sexual reorientation programs. Also deals with people's denial of being gay, and then a good, and all in good fun too. Seeing RuPaul not in drag was a little weird, despite the fact that he had a spectacular performance. It's weird calling RuPaul a he. Anyway, this is definitely proof that she can act. So stay away from Star Booty. We talked about a year or two ago.
Last year.
The rest of the cast was fantastic. I have nothing bad to say about this movie. You should see it. Damn, I'm having deja vu again.
Yeah, I think it's a fun, campy romp of a film that sometimes delves into some serious territory. I think it's a great watch. Some people may have a hard time looking past the sort of made for, to me now, to me, what looks like a sort of made for video look to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of has that Sorted Lives feel to it.
Yeah. But it's still a good film. So.
And definitely not for everybody, but I thought it was totally fun for what it's worth. Like I said, I just never got Natasha as the lead. She just seems to be odd for me the entire movie. But once you get past it and just look at all the different characters and all the colors and all the fun, it's definitely a heartfelt film.
Worth seeing. overall from us, it's a yes from us.
Thumb up.
So let's add this to our flick chart. I don't think we've ever put this in yet. So let's start off with this is an interesting combo. Venom a cheerleader versus A Bug's Life.
I wasn't really into A Bug's Life.
Yeah, I might say cheerleader, actually.
Oh. I'm going cheerleader, yeah. Bug's Life was not my favorite.
It was pretty good, though. I think this actually broke because it gave me American Pie versus Clockwork Orange. Maybe I had it idling too long or something. Since it's here.
I'm going to say Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, this is broken. Hold on. It was idling too long. I loaded it too quickly. Okay, rewrite this movie. Okay. Better Mature Leader versus Eyes Wide Shut.
I don't think I've ever actually seen Eyes Wide Shut, so. Okay. Yeah.
Must have, because it was ranked. And I can't and haven't seen before.
I don't remember seeing it. I know of it. That's the Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Stanley Kubrick one. Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Steven?
I would go with But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah,
I'm
not a big fan. So we at least got that taken care of. I'll see what we can do about the other one. But I'm a Cheerleader versus WALL-E.
WALL-E.
I'd go WALL-E.
But I'm a Cheerleader versus Ocean's 12.
Damn, it's Ocean's 12.
I know. What is it ranked on our list?
It was 55.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's now 55 because I clicked on But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah.
But I'm a Cheerleader versus Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo.
But I'm a Cheerleader versus Small Town Gay Bar.
I would say But I'm a Cheerleader.
I'm going there.
But I'm a Cheerleader versus Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
Oh, Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
That's not a given. And I think this is our final honing. But I'm a Cheerleader versus Milk. I'm going for Milk on this one.
I go with But I'm a Cheerleader
myself. Yeah, I'm going with But I'm a Cheerleader.
Really? Okay. Congratulations! But I'm a Cheerleader is now 48 on your flick chart.
Yay.
Did a whole bunch of honing there because Indiana Jones was 40, Last Crusade was 47. Now we're in My Mature Leader 48. Milk was at 49. Small Town Gay Bar was at 50.
Sweet.
So that's added to our flip chart. Moving on into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. 35% rotten, 62% audience. Directed by Timur Bekmambetov.
Good effort.
Good try. I have to do this every day. I get these names pop up and I have no idea how to spell it. So I try and then they're there and I'm like, sorry about that, I butchered your name. But that's besides the point. Starring Benjamin Walker, Rufus Sewell, and Dominic Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
So, Abe's mother was killed by a vampire. So, he's a little upset about that. And he learns how to kill vampires. So, yeah. And then he has to hide it from all of America as he rises to the height of politics in America.
Yes. What do we think about the revisionist history?
Only slightly. I mean, and these things could have probably still happened.
Okay.
Obviously it's revisionist because, you know, vampires.
Right.
I think he probably kept everything subtle and silent enough that it was just kept out of the history book. So there still could be that place in there. I don't think they did too much revisionism. Although maybe the train.
The train might have been a little.
I find it interesting how you know, according to this movie, that he was really only fighting the Civil War as some sort of subtext to his vampire bigotry, you know?
Vampire bigotry?
Yes. Well, he had a hatred of vampires, didn't yeah. like them.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
So he wanted to unite
the country. War on vampires.
Mm-hmm. Right. He wanted to unite the country in a showing of strength against the vampires.
Well, the interesting thing is that they, you know, through very little exposition, they say that basically the southern United States is basically controlled by vampires completely. Like, right. that's their little kingdom down there. So, and essentially, you know, the slavery is basically a cover for vampires being able to feed off of people whenever they want.
But a red herring.
Right. 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 Exactly.
So, don't know how comfortable I am with that whole revisionist part of history, but
I don't know. Seeing the battle in the bayou. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, on the plantation, it wasn't actually in the bayou, but still. Battle in the bayou just was nice to say. Anyways, yeah. So that man knows how to swing an axe. What do you think?
Yeah, somehow he manages to just, you know, conjure up enough strength to blow through tree trunks and single blows, and just right. because he has gotten to the truth of his hatred or something, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the silver has something about when you're talking about him blowing off heads of the vampires? Do you think that might have actually just been like the silver touched them and they kind of exploded extra because it was silver?
I have no problem with the actual the dispatching of the vampire part, but the whole sort of almost superpower-esque like jumping from horse to horse.
Oh yeah, the whole train scene
was pretty over the top as far as what he's able to. But not only him, it seems like everybody in this movie is somehow a badass magically. They just like can fight with these, you know, who knows where they're getting their strength from.
Yeah, right. That's one of those you definitely have to turn off your suspension of disbelief and on there.
I could not.
Just because it just looks freaking cool. Yeah. You know, it's not because there's a reason or they can explain it or anything like that. It's just because it looks freaking cool. Which, honestly, that's what this movie was.
Right. Well, I mean, honestly, there was nothing that was good.
It just looks freaking cool.
Say again, Ray.
I said, honestly, that's what mostly sums up Timmer's career.
True.
Is it? He does it because it looks cool. I think the only time he's ever done something that I connected with was when he did Nine.
Mm.
I don't think I've seen Nine. Oh, Timmer is cute.
Now, as far as the tone stuff, I see somebody put questions in here about.
Well, tone. I never read the source material.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I do know some people who did, and they hadn't seen the movie yet, and they kept asking me, like, you know, they're like, well, did you like it? And I was like, not really. And they're like, well, what didn't you like about it? I said, well, first of all, it seemed to, like, take itself way too seriously. Like, yeah. I mean, I was getting dizzy from the amount of eye rolls I was pulling off in the theater. But what I got from the people that had read the story was that the story doesn't take itself very seriously. That it is sort of campy and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get any of that from this movie.
They were doing it too serious that the camp kind of failed.
Yeah.
The camp from the actual story was failed because they didn't act it the campiness way.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept it serious. So when they say any of those cliche lines or anything, you know, what they should have done was kind of like what that one parody trailer they had, basically because there was an Abraham Lincoln vampire slayer. My name is George Washington, and I cannot tell the lie.
Right.
You're gonna die, George Washington, psycho killer. I'm not sure if you've seen that. There's a film thing. But that sort of campiness was probably the tone that they should have had for this movie, to at least have them demonstrate, yes, we know this is campy, and that's how we're playing this. So,
yeah. And the other thing, and this is really nothing much of a talking point, but I almost started to count how many times they said the word Illinois in the movie. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard the word Illinois said in a movie so many times.
Well, at least it wasn't Illinois.
Yeah.
You know,
we got at least outside the only time you usually hear the word Illinois in a movie is when they talk like Chicago, Illinois, you know? And it was just like, I'm like, wow, I'm going to start counting on my phone how many times I've said this word.
Yeah. I don't even really know what all to say about this movie other than it was just kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean,
it was worth shutting, you know, just shutting down and letting go for, because it's visually stimulating.
I guess my problem is I have a hard time doing that. Like, I have especially when it comes to, I think when it comes to vampire stuff, I've come to the realization that I'm much more a fan of the sort of classical vampire, which this sort of tries to be.
Interview with the Vampire, maybe.
Well, that sort of thing, like the old world, classic vampire tale. Because I even consider True Blood, as even though it's set in modern times and deals with modern things, to me it's much more of a classic vampire story than some other things like Blade.
Classical style, not.
Well, it's about the presentation of the vampires. Like,
yeah.
It's about the presentation of the vampires. They're still very proper and trying to find their way into your life, and you know, kind of, they're creatures, but they're not just out randomly killing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like a style to them, that style of vampire. I know what you're saying, like that kind of thing, versus the 30 Days of Night indiscriminate killing,
right?
Creatures. Right. And yeah, this movie still does have that, because notice, you know, the vampires in this movie, they weren't lower class. They were all upper class. They were owners and managers, and they owned the plantation, or they did, you know, that kind of stuff. They weren't commoners.
Right. But other than the main bad guy, you don't really get to know any of them. It's more of like, here's a name, go kill it. Here's a name, go kill it.
Right.
You know, so the vampires in this movie come off much more as like, oh, here's the monster for this scene, like, you know.
Yeah,
that's true. Because he's supposed to be the vampire hunter. He hunts vampires. Does he really care about the vampire other than the fact that he's a vampire? No, not really.
That's great. Right. Didn't work for me, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then you have the twist of the fact that his handler is actually a vampire, which I think I figured out the very first time I met him.
Well, yeah, when he throws a dude 20 feet up in the air, I kind of figured out that, hey, something else is going on here. Especially when they don't bother to explain why he has, you know, able to fight the way he is.
But then he tries to explain it off.
Right.
With the axe. You're right.
You know the truth.
Exactly. But, I mean, but it is what it was. I did think it looked good. It was dark, but I think it was meant to be. I thought the shots were kind of interesting. The period clothing was really cool.
Yeah. Did anybody see it in 3D?
I did see it in 3D.
And?
I mean, I thought it because of the visualness, it was worth it.
Yeah.
It were...
This was a converted one, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. I thought it was worth seeing because I like this kind of movie, and I like the, you know, the explosions and, you know, and things like that. And so I enjoyed it in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's for everybody. I don't think I needed to see it in 3D, but I just chose to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I have problems when they start to diverge away from the sort of classical story. But without any explanation as to why, like, we got one sentence thing that goes, oh, adapted to sunlight.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so I guess they can be out in the sunlight. Like,
and they wear sunscreen.
Right. You know.
But, so, you know, but there was a lot for me. As I was watching this movie, I kept thinking of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of the same reasons. It feels like the same reasons that you're not particularly into this one is the same reasons that I dislike Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
That series.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Sherlock Holmes series either. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just hearing what you're saying. I think the only thing that saves this for me is vampires.
No, you know, I don't think that saved it at all.
No.
Yeah, that didn't save it at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, critically, the positives definitely were that people thought it was imaginative and fun. And I say people meaning like two. Mm. You know, it is what it is, so just enjoy it for what it was. And then another backhanded compliment of, sure, it's full of questionable taste and choices, but it's entertaining. You know?
Nice.
Yeah. On the negative side, there was a ton. Ultimately, I read out that it was just, it tried way too hard to be serious and just failed at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was very style over substance. And then just generally, overall, it was just a fail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was very little positive to find from critics on this movie.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what have we learned from this movie? We have learned that common-looking people are the best in the world. That's why God made so many of them. Only the living can kill the dead. And plant your feet and stand firm. The only question is where to plant your feet. And that is what we've learned from Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. I keep wanting to say Vampire Slayer for some reason. I mean, keep thinking about
it. We keep calling it Vampire Hunter L.
Oh.
I'm going to have to agree with the critics more on this one, but not completely. It's definitely not a good movie, but I still enjoyed myself. So I'm not sure how it compares to the book, but this is definitely a streamer for sure.
Yeah, for me, this is an example of style over substance. Timmer is excellent at creating a visually entertaining movie, but I think he sort of fails on the other things. You have to assume that there's any substance in this movie to begin with, which I don't think there was very much of. I feel like I could have watched this whole movie with the sound off and probably had a better time.
Oh, I thought it was just a fun excursion. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be, so I just kind of turned off the brain and watched it for all the pretty colors and fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I think that was kind of the point. So.
Yeah.
Moving on into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Rise of the Guardians. Releasing November 21st, 2012, directed by Peter Ramsey, Hugh Jackman, Alec Baldwin, and Isla Fisher. The film revolves around a group of Guardians, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Sandman, and Tooth Fairy, joining forces along with Jack Frost when the Boogeyman enacts a plan to bring total darkness into the world by destroying the hopes and dreams of children everywhere.
Nope.
You know, honestly, me reading that does not compare to the trailer in one way, shape, or form. Because, well, for one thing, I didn't know the Boogeyman was enacting a plan to bring total darkness into the world by destroying the hopes and dreams of children everywhere. Mm-hmm. I just knew that a badass Santa Claus, an Australian Easter Bunny, and the Tooth Fairy and Sandman, who didn't have anything impressive to say about it, were going to go kick ass somehow.
Mm.
There was something that was going to, they're trying to protect the children or something, and they were going to do their whole Guardian thing and be badass. And I'm like, yeah, I'm there. need you say more? You don't have to tell me anything about the plot. I'm watching this thing.
You're just there because Santa was a big old polar bear with tats all up his arm.
No, he
was
tattooed Santa Claus. How odd is that?
He had black hair.
But he had Naughty and Nice. That was
Naughty and Nice. That was freaking awesome. I'm like, that is the type of Santa Claus that I'd lift my legs for. Anyways.
I'm totally going to have my friend Brian get those tattoos now, because he totally plays Santa Claus during the winter, like actually gets paid to do it. And I'm like, dude, you totally need to get Naughty and Nice tattooed on you. That would be awesome.
Him as the Russian, though. Santa as like a Russian with tats.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, that it makes sense to me, though.
Cold, I mean,
in terms of the character.
Yeah. Okay, I'm okay with that. And just because they're Russian doesn't mean that they are really cool and awesome and friendly. So, I mean,
I grew up in the Cold War era. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. I was like,
I grew up during the Cold War too. But I also grew up with Colossus. So
true. Oh, Lord. Yeah. Just kidding. Sorry, Ray. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. That's fine. But I'm so fixated on both Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, because the Easter Bunny looks awesome. He's like, it's like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, the action heroes movie. I'm
Did you notice in the trailer, at least I'm referencing at least the trailer that I saw at the movie last night. The first time you actually see the Easter Bunny, the kid found some eggs, and you just kind of see his eye in the thing in there. And then later on, you see what to me felt like a completely different Easter Bunny. But then he spoke, and Hugh Jackman's voice comes out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and like his actual Australian.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, dude. I mean, you sold me on the Santa with the tattoos. But then you give me an Easter Bunny who speaks with an Australian accent. Yeah, I'm sold. Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, it's sort of like the Justice League of children's holiday heroes,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going to be interesting. It's definitely a unique take on it. You know.
Yeah, I'm interested in finding out what ends up happening with this influence of Guillermo del Toro into this, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know what kind of twisted tales he tends to spin.
Right.
So I'm very interested to see where it goes with his influence. Where do you have any ideas of where you think it's going to go based off what you saw?
I think
he's going to push it into a little bit darker territory than than other studios might be comfortable with doing, especially with a film that's at a very surface level looks like it's marketed towards kids.
Well, it was also a book originally, it's based off of, I forgot the name of the book, but it was The Guardian, something of the Guardians or something like that. So it was already pre-written, so most of this is probably going to be lifted directly from that book. Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't have much to do, maybe, but there could be stylistic stuff. And I don't remember seeing anything about what the boogeyman looked like in the trailer.
It was just like the sort of I'm guessing it was like the nothing from.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it kind of came off like that.
But the book was called The Guardians of Childhood.
Here we go.
It's a series, I guess, of books.
Okay, so this is kind of like the first is getting when they really come out and fight.
So do you think, based off of what we know now, of this information, you know, that this is a kids movie?
I mean, I would guess. I mean, I'm still going to say yes. I mean, I think it's going to go, like I said, into a little bit of a darker territory with Del Toro there. He always tends to sort of put a darker tinge on things. What's going to be interesting to see is whether or not his dark tinge is going to go into the dark and frightening that he normally goes into.
Oh, true. Yeah,
or if it's going to go into this just sort of, like, I could also say that Tim Burton has a sort of dark take on a lot of things, but it's not as scary dark as Del Toro's. Mm-hmm. So
it made me think a lot of Tim Burton when I first started seeing this, and then when it said Guillermo del Toro, I was like, oh,
This could be interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, this is totally going to be on your list, if anything. It's not there already. November 21st, who has it? Anyways, where were we? So, yeah.
So, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that I'm excited. Yeah, I'm completely on board in this movie. Santa Claus looks built. I suppose the fantasy of them all from when I was a child just kind of makes me all giggly interested in it. So bring it!
You're going to start believing in Santa Claus again, Jeff? Is that what you're saying?
No, I've always believed in Santa Claus. I mean, the way I believe in Santa Claus has changed. But
have you seen the Santa Claus poster? The Rise of the Guardians poster?
Oh, the one where his arms are crossed and it says,
yeah. And I love how it just says, "You better believe."
I mean, dude, they got great marketing. It just seems to be like this great storyline. So,
yeah. So, honestly, do I really need to tell you my excitement levels? Honestly, yeah. Bring on November. That's all I have to say.
Right. Just from watching the trailer, I just say, wow, what a retelling of tales we all grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely going to be interesting. I don't know that I'm sold yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of the content. I think it's that DreamWorks Animation and I have gone around and around.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm still happy with, what's his name? Will Ferrell.
Oh, okay.
Why my brain is going? I'm still happy with that.
Uh huh.
So I'm hoping that
Arthur
stay in that realm. No. With our why am I having the brain fart?
Elf?
The brain guy. No, the big headed guy. That was DreamWorks.
Megamind.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Megamind. I certainly don't have one. Okay. But but I'm still happy with that. So I'm hoping that I'm still going to be on the same wavelength.
Wasn't DreamWorks also How It Did Train Your Dragon?
Yes.
Okay. So see, there's another one.
Well, see, you know what? I haven't seen How to Train Your Dragon.
What's
I know.
Next available slot. I can make changes right now, and you know.
But I haven't seen it, so I can't.
Ray, I think that would be more appropriate to have in one of your movies.
Okay,
so find a slot.
Just
we'll adjust accordingly, because next week is mine, and next week we're going to be taking a look at Star Wars Episode 4: A New Hope. Listen to
in other words, the original Star Wars.
Talking about it. I'm actually going to be talking about. Going to be watching two versions. I'm going to watch the theatrical version and the special edition because I have both. And I can get you copies of the theatrical if you need it. But that's beside the point. Also, be take a look at Disney's Pixar's newest film, Brave.
Did you say Pixar?
Disney Pixar. I heard that too.
Tired. No, Pixar. I said okay. Pixar. I'm sticking to it. Anyway, Brave. And also in the future, we'll be talking about The Master.
Well, and I'm going to say, too, that I'm going to go sneak off and see Magic Mike. No offense. Okay.
Hey, that could be a good cut.
There you go.
Anyway, there's plenty of ways to comment. Let us know what you think about these movies or any other movies in the future that we'll be talking about. But popping over to our website, colmovies.com, comment on the blog. We'd very much appreciate it. You can follow us on, you can shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us send us a little MP3 file with the voice, you know, from the voice recorder on your mobile phone. Play it on the show and we'll talk about it. Also, if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can also do it by calling 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies, where we've had two more likes this past week. Which were Mark and Grizz. Thank you for liking our page.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep watch over that. Where sometimes Fuzz puts some extra special stuff in there, or Steven. Also follow us on Google Plus at gplus.to/COMovies. Please pop over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We need some. You need some reviews, so. Mm-hmm. Oh, we prefer 5-star. I will read whatever you type into the message on the show. So if you want me to read some, well, not a dead baby joke. I already did that for COL, so let's try to avoid that for any of the future ones. But whatever you want to put in there, and I will read it verbatim if I can pronounce the words.
All
right. So you can do something like in Japanese, and you can have me try to pronounce it. Yeah. But that's the final thoughts.
I'm going to be in Colorado next week during our recording. So somebody please remind me that I'm an extra hour behind. Otherwise, I'm going to screw it up.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you will be.
Yeah. I'm going to put a reminder on my phone, but don't put it past me to totally forget. So.
Okay. We're good. All right. For that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.